Good morning. I want to be sharing from John chapter 5 this morning, and if you would turn there, that would be a good thing. This is the third message that I've shared from the Gospel of John. When I started preaching from John, I didn't mean for it to turn into a series, but it kind of did. And so previously, we studied the healing of the nobleman's son, and then the healing of the lame man beside the pool of Bethesda. I'm going to pick up where I left off in John chapter 5, verses 16 through 30. So this is a sermon of Jesus, and it's in response to what happened after he healed the lame man. Because he healed the lame man on the Sabbath day, the Jews were stirred up in opposition against him, and Jesus preaches this message in response to that, and he's saying, this is why I do what I do. And this is really significant for us because it tells us about Jesus. It speaks to the questions of, can Jesus be trusted? What does his life tell us about God? And what do we do with all this? What should this tell us about our lives? So let's read this passage, John 5, 16 through 30. For this reason, the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, my Father has been working until now, and I have been working. Therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him, because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Then Jesus answered and said to them, most assuredly I say to you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he sees the Father do, for whatever he does, the Son also does in like manner. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all things that he himself does. And he will show him greater works than these that you may marvel. For as the Father raises the dead and gives life to them, even so the Son gives life to whom he will. For the Father judges no one, but has committed all judgment to the Son, that all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, but has passed from death into life. Most assuredly, I say to you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself, and has given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice and come forth, those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. So in this passage, you could kind of break it down into three sections by subject. In the first handful of verses, verses 16 through 20, Jesus talks about his works, which he does good on the Sabbath because he works like his Father works. And this makes the Jews upset. But Jesus says, I only do the works that my Father shows me to do. Then he talks about his life, that he is the source of life. He's been given life, he gives life. And that's in verses 21 through 26. As the Father gives life, so will Jesus. And he's about ready to demonstrate this in stunning fashion by calling the dead man Lazarus out of his tomb. Those who believe cross over from death to life. And then finally, he talks about his authority to judge, and that the Father has given him this authority. And someday there will be a final resurrection when all will come forth, and his judgment is righteous because it lines up with the will of the Father. It's not self-centered or self-serving. I want to make one quick comment specifically on verse 18, where the Jews said, the Jews sought all the more to kill him because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. And this sort of a side note, but and maybe it's not necessary to point out, but I will point it out anyway, that John does not make any kind of correction or he doesn't try to adjust this conclusion that the Jews reach. Okay? He doesn't, the Jews made this conclusion. Now, if somebody was trying to argue that Jesus is not equal to God, they might say, but Jesus didn't say he's equal with God right here. That's just what the Jews concluded. But John does not try to correct this conclusion. And John is not, he is not shy about correcting misconceptions. If you turn to the very end of John, of this gospel, where people were thinking that John was going to live forever, but Jesus didn't say that, John said. Jesus just said, what is it to you if this man remains until I return? And so John corrected that issue. There was a false assumption. He corrected that. A much greater deal would be this one. Is Jesus equal with God? And John does not, by not making any kind of correction, he is saying, this is true. This is an accurate conclusion. Jesus is equal with God. There's no way he would have not corrected that if it hadn't been accurate. And Jesus would have corrected it too if it hadn't been accurate, but it is an accurate conclusion. Okay, so I just wanted to spend that bit of time on that verse because it's important. Now I want to talk about, I've got several observations. This is not a deep theological sermon in any way, but there are several observations I want to pull out of these verses here. And the first one is that Jesus lived his life in a way that proved he is authentic and trustworthy. Because Jesus made some big claims about why he does what he does. He made the claim that he is here to do God's will and not his own. And he says this in three different ways in this passage. In verse 17, my Father's been working until now, and I've been working. And then in verse 19, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he sees the Father do. For whatever he does, the Son also does. And then in verse 30, I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge. My judgment is righteous because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me. Okay? So now I'm going to have a real quick children's class, and those of you who are children can come up here and sit on this side and see what happens. This would work better with a couple more. So Kyle, would you mind joining us this time? And Sophie too, you can sit right here. I just need a couple more. All right, thank you. So I'm going to talk about what makes somebody trustworthy, somebody you can trust. What makes you trust them? Okay? And I'm going to have an object lesson. And it's a little bit complicated, and I might mess up and have to do it over again. But we'll see we'll do our best. And the first thing, this is not part of the object lesson. Well, I need to give you each a piece of candy, but don't eat it yet. Just hang on to it, all right? So what makes you decide a person is trustworthy? So I'm going to pretend to be two different people. And then at the end, after both of these people have talked to you, you can tell me which one you trust and why do you trust them. So when I put on this hat, I want to be Andy. And when I put on this hat, you can pretend I'm somebody named Frank. All right? I want to be Andy first, and then we'll kind of start over, and I'll be Frank. All right? Oh, and over here, this jar represents poor, hungry children in Cambodia. All right? Let's just pretend this jar is the poor, hungry children of Cambodia. And both Frank and Andy say they want to help them. See, they're sad. Hi. I'm Andy. And I'm really concerned about these poor, hungry children over here in Cambodia. And I want to help them. And it just really hurts me inside that they're hungry and haven't had any candy for a long time. So I want to take up a little offering. And would you have any candy you'd like to give to the poor, hungry children in Cambodia? Okay, I'll just do a little offering. Oh, y'all are so generous. It's just very generous of you, and I really appreciate it. And it's going to take me a little bit to package this up and get it over to the poor, hungry children in Cambodia. But that's very, you know, God's going to bless you. You have really blessed these children in Cambodia. See how happy they are? They should be happy. They should be more grateful. But it was very good of you to give that candy to them. Okay, that was Andy. We're going to do this again, except it'll be Frank. Okay, I'm Frank, right? Is that pointed the right way? So, hi, I'm Frank, and I'm really concerned about the poor, starving children in Cambodia. And they haven't had anything to eat for a long time. And they haven't had any candy, that's for sure. And I just want to take up an offering to help them. And, so if you've got anything you would like to give to the poor, hungry children of Cambodia, that would be wonderful. Okay. Who was most trustworthy? Andy, who went first, or Frank, Victoria? Frank is more trustworthy. Why do you not trust Andy? Andy ate some of the candy. Did you see that? Andy ate some of the candy himself, and he didn't even put it all in. He put in one piece, but there were like six pieces or seven pieces he should have put in. Do you think that Andy really cared about the poor, starving children? No. Why not? So he was really interested. Who did he care about? Patrick, who did Andy care about? He cared about Andy. He cared about himself. And so instead of really serving these children over here, he was serving himself. But Frank put in all of it, plus some of his own. He did what he said, and he really was there to help these children. So the lesson is about who do you find trustworthy? Jesus came and he said he's not here to serve himself. He is here to serve people. And all his life, Jesus was like Frank. And he gave to people, and he served God, and he did not take it for himself. Does that make sense? Jesus was trustworthy because he served people. Okay. I feel like I have to give you a piece before you go back to your parents. So the first observation I want to make from this passage, Jesus makes this really important claim that he's not here to serve himself. He's here to serve the Father. He is focused on doing the will of the Father. And he lived this out perfectly. He did not ever take anything for himself or act in a selfish way. I can't find anything to be suspicious about. If Jesus had only been really nice to people all of the time, then I'd be suspicious he was in it for the popularity. If Jesus had been especially paid special attention to those in power or the authorities or whatever, then I would become suspicious that he was in it for the power. If he had had a really comfortable lifestyle and a lot of things, I would think maybe he's actually in it for that, or at least partially, right? And we look at public figures all the time, and we wonder about some of these things. If Jesus had made a lot of promises about, you know, if you give, you're going to get a lot of, you'll be very successful and wealthy in this life, and everything you dreamed of, you'll get, then I'd be suspicious he was in it for the following or running for election or something. He was trying to manipulate people. But instead, Jesus said hard things to people. He said, sin no more, take up your cross, expect persecution, sell your possessions. He was willing to be tired and overworked. He was willing to put himself in harm's way, healing on the Sabbath, chasing out the money changers, spoke truth to people that made them so upset and they were ready to stone him. And his death wasn't a miscalculation. Oh, he went too far. Didn't mean for that to happen. But instead, it was something he predicted. And in the end, it came down to whose will is it? Not my will, but the Father's. Jesus made choices that cost him everything that the world holds dear. And so I find it so compelling when he says he's not from this world. He's from above. He was unworldly, like no one else. A lot of people are impressed by the Jesus they see in the Bible and the Jesus of the Gospels. And I know Christians would say, you know, if we could put Jesus in charge of everything, we would. And I saw, and maybe even some non-Christians would come close to saying, I would like to see Jesus in charge. But I saw the sign leaving Walmart the other day, a little election-style sign, but it said, Jesus 2024. And I thought that was good. I liked it. But, you know, when you say things like that, and you say, it would be wonderful if he was in charge, there's a very personal implication to that, which is, well, you can put him in charge of your own life. Would you trust him with that? So the first point is that Jesus is trustworthy because his life matched up with these claims he made about not living for himself. There's no basis for being suspicious. He lived such a sacrificial and servant-focused life. So the second thing I want to point out about this passage is just that the Jesus of the Gospels, this is who God is. There's a oneness here. He works the way the Father works. He gives life as the Father gives life. His authority is equal to the Father's because the Father has given all judgment over to him. He's to be honored as the Father is honored, And he does whatever the Father shows him, and the Father shows him everything. So Jesus is God, and when we see Jesus, we see God. Now, I think there is a tendency, probably we all would agree with this, there's a tendency out there to view the God of the Old Testament as kind of rough and fierce and demanding. But that is not the whole picture of the God of the Old Testament. There's a lot of tenderness there and gentleness. So that's not the whole picture. And then on the flip side, there's a tendency to view Jesus as being very mild-mannered, gentle, and kind, which is true, he was. But that's not the whole picture either. Jesus sometimes was quite fierce, and he rebuked people, and he got angry. But he got angry and fierce about exactly the kind of things that make him trustworthy. Like if he never got angry and was always just nice to people, then I'd be back to being suspicious. So the whole picture is Jesus and God are the same. Jesus said in John chapter 8, you don't know me or my Father. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. So when we read the Gospels and we're impressed by what we see there of Jesus, we need to realize or be reminded of that if you think for the Jesus that you see in the Gospels, if you think you could trust this man, then realize that you can trust God. And if you think that this man that we read about in the Gospels, if you think he would take the time to listen to you and be interested in whatever your problems are, then realize that God is the same way, and he wants to listen to you and hear about your problems. If you think that Jesus would want to help you, even if it cost him, like it cost him to just heal the lame man, got him into trouble, then realize that God is the same, and he wants to help you even if it costs him. And he, obviously it has already, a lot, and he will help. So if you like what you see in the Gospels about Jesus, realize this, you're seeing God. There's perfect harmony between the Father and the Son, and Jesus hasn't changed either. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Okay, a third point that I want to make about this passage is about the what we see in Jesus and his purpose and how that needs to become real in our lives. Disciples need to imitate Jesus. And maybe that feels a little bit like an impossible order, an impossible concept, but it's not a ridiculous idea that disciples need to imitate Jesus. It's kind of what disciples, being a disciple, means. Paul said somewhere that imitate me, he said, as I imitate Christ. And so obviously to the Apostle Paul, he felt like he could, to some extent, imitate Jesus and also pass that on to his followers. So it wasn't some kind of out there idea that's ridiculous. It's something for us to focus on, something for us to attempt, even if we can't do it perfectly. Handwriting. Talk about handwriting just for a second. Handwriting is something that when I'm making notes and I'm in a hurry and not trying to be neat, it's very difficult for me to read. And this isn't even a joke. I will sit there and look at it and squint my eyes, because when I'm writing at the time, I'm not really thinking about coming back and reading it. It's not really my focus. Now, I know somebody who also has a similar problem, but when this person is doing his or her penmanship and tries to copy someone else in the class who apparently has very neat handwriting, that person's penmanship suddenly gets a whole lot neater. And I'm like, wow, that's actually very neat. Didn't know you could do so well. And they're copying this other person. So in a similar way, I think we can apply that to ourselves. We're going to do we're going to look more like Jesus if we are trying to imitate him. We're going to live differently if we're trying to imitate Jesus than if we just kind of, if that's not part of our life purpose. It's going to make a big difference. Or if we think it's impossible. So when Jesus said things like, I do nothing of myself, and I don't seek my own will, but the will of him who sent me. We should ask ourselves, what does that look like in my life? Because this is a big part of who Jesus is. And if we're going to imitate him, then that purpose, we need to have a similar kind of purpose, which is I'm not living this life for myself. Does it mean I can never buy a raspberry sundae at Klein's? No, I hope not. Doing the will of God doesn't mean there's a really fine line that we have to walk, heel to toe, tightrope walk, that we have to be on and stress out over every decision that comes our way, because that would not be joyful. That'd be painful. But it does mean that we need to realize that we're not number one. We can't be number one in our life. And if we know that God wants us to do something, then if we're going to be imitators of Jesus, we really need to try to do it. I stole a question from a study book by N.T. Wright. His study question was, what would it look like for Christians to say, Jesus is working, and so am I? And if you actually say, Jesus is working, this is how Jesus works, I'm going to do the same thing. And remember, for a lot of Jesus' life, he was a carpenter, and he had a dad and a mom and sisters and brothers to relate to. And what did it look like when he went about his work day and made things for people? Or how did he relate to his brothers and sisters? And they weren't always nice all the time. And how did Jesus manage his time? I've been thinking about that more lately. Now, but there were a lot of things that he would have liked to have gotten done that he wasn't able to do. If we were better imitators of Jesus, who is not of this world, this is kind of going back to the original point that Jesus' testimony is convincing because of how he lived his life, and the same could be said about us. If we worked as Jesus worked, I believe if Christianity as a whole made that their focus, I think this world would be a better place. So the three points I wanted to get out of these verses is, first of all, that Jesus is authentic and trustworthy, and throughout his life, he lived a life of servanthood and self-sacrifice. He can be trusted. And the second point is that Jesus is one with God. And what we see about Jesus in the Gospels that we see so compelling, this is who God is. And the last point is just that Jesus should be imitated. And so we should be trying to live our lives with a similar purpose as Jesus and not be about focusing on how do I live my best life or get the most out of life, but what is God's will for me? God bless you.